Accession number 16703, Arena Quint, Reel 1, followed after a pause by Reel 2. Left channel is informant's mic only, right channel informant plus interviewer.
Reena Quint, Reel 1. So if I could ask you first of all, Reena, something about your background. If you could tell me where you were born and brought up. And I know you were a very small child before the war, but are there any memories at all?
I was born in a town called Pietrzyca, which is in Poland. The whole name is Pietrzyków Trybunalski. And I was approximately 3 when the war started, and approximately 9 when the war ended. And I say approximately because not until 89, when I went back to Poland, did I find my real birth certificate. Before that, I was the same 9 years old without knowing the exact date, but I was given a birthday when I got to Sweden after liberation from Bergen-Belsen. The only real things that I remember from before the war was that I lived in a house with my mother, my father, and 2 brothers. One was named David, and one was named Josef. And we lived in a house with a balcony that really stands out in my mind. And across the street, there was a kiosk where they sold ice cream. And I used to remember getting ice cream there. The only other thing that I remember was that my 2 brothers used to put me on a sled. And I'm sure it didn't snow all the time, but I just remember this sled. And my mother would give me a big pot and put meat and potatoes and barley and beans in it. And we would take that to the bakery on Fridays. And it would sit in the bakery the whole night. And it would be brought back on Saturday. Because Jews in those days, even to this day, do not cook on Saturday. So they have this pot with all this food cooking the whole night. And I don't know if everybody brought it to the bakery because they didn't have stoves, maybe, or because it tasted better. I don't know why, but I remember that. And that's really all I remember before the war. And then the ghetto started. And we lived on a street in the ghetto. And people from surrounding areas, surrounding neighborhoods and surrounding cities who were thrown out of their villages had to come into Pietrzyca because that became the ghetto. And I believe it was the first ghetto in September 39 it started, and it lasted for several years, I believe. There was a large ghetto and a small ghetto. And I remember people coming into our apartment and moving in. I think if you were lucky enough to have a cousin or a brother or had enough money to pay somebody, you would move in with other people. I don't remember who the people were, but I remember it got very, very crowded. And there were a lot of people were sick a lot of the time. And people were dying. And people were hungry. Hunger seemed to have been there. And some people were lucky enough to work. I believe my father, before the war, was a tailor. And speaking to people afterwards, because I don't remember his doing this job, but when I went back in 1989 to my hometown and I found the apartment with a Christian lady living in that house, apparently when the ghetto was liquidated, Polish people moved in, and the woman who lives in the house now remembers my family. I do not. I wouldn't even know what they looked like.
Would you have been aware at all of a war situation, you know, that Poland had been invaded as a young child? Did you have any concept at all that this was all because of a war?
I can't remember an early age that I knew about the war, except that people were always running and scared and there was this hunger. I don't know that I knew what a war was. I doubt it.
So, you know, you've explained this sort of The vague memory you have of your parents. You know, obviously you were so young. What do you remember about them?
Not very much. I seem to remember my brothers more, although I had a very hard time about that because I always had my brothers' pictures in my mind. And there's a picture that is very often shown in Holocaust books of a little boy with his arms up. And somehow or other, I remember my brothers looking like that. But not necessarily their faces. Maybe it's the hat and the kind of pants. And the, so I can't remember their faces. But I had a very hard time with this because in my own mind, I always talked about it. And I was adopted many different times before I reached the United States. And my brother's pictures were always in my mind, but I somehow or other never wanted to talk about it. And finally, in 1968 or thereabouts, I met a cousin. Actually, he was an uncle. His wife was a sister of my biological mother. I have to say my biological mother because I've had an adopted mother who's really been my mother for longer than I had my real mother. And when I spoke to him and I told him about my brothers and I called them by name, he said, oh, you really didn't have any brothers. You had sisters. And I was so upset because I remembered that I had brothers and I could touch them. I could feel them. I knew that they pulled me on a sled. And he said, you were a little girl. You wouldn't remember. And I started having my own doubts. Maybe I made them up in my mind. But then in 89, I went back to Poland and I found their birth certificates with the names. So nobody can take that away from me. I know that they were there.
So what do you remember, you know, sort of specifically about the ghetto? Are there any sort of incidents that stick in your mind?
In the ghetto, the main incident that sticks in my mind was when there was an action, a roundup. And the women and the children screaming and yelling and being separated were rounded up, herded up, and we were taken to a large place. I remember this large place and I remember streams of people being pushed into it. But again, when I went back, I found out that that place was the synagogue. And I was in that synagogue with my mother and my brothers. And if anybody moved, there was shooting, there were beatings, there were soldiers all through there. And I remember this whole feeling of pandemonium and everybody just, I guess it was a scene out of hell. And there was a door in that room. And there was a man on the other side of that door. I don't know exactly who he was, but somehow or other, I believe, and I say I believe because I've never had proof of that, I believe he was my uncle. And he beckoned to me, and he said, run, Fredja, run. And I was very young. I was very naive. I was very stupid. And I don't know how a child could really let go of her mother. Imagine at that point you'd be holding on for all you could possibly do. But somehow or other, I don't know if she pushed me. I don't remember that. I don't know if the hand of God pushed me. I don't know. I don't know why, but I ran. And I ran to this man. Of what I know, that whole shipment of people, that whole transport was sent to Treblinka. And they were killed. They were gassed there. And I've been back to Treblinka, where I found a stone of Pietrikov. Of course, nobody is buried under that stone, but it's a symbolic stone of our hometown. And as far as I know, my mother and brothers were gassed in Treblinka. I was taken back by this man to my father. My father, what was he supposed to be doing with me? So first he hid me in a cellar, and I met somebody who remembers also being in that cellar. And in that cellar, I remember when we were told when we could even use the pail to go to the bathroom because you couldn't make any noise. And we were down there for a while, I don't know how long. But when that was no longer feasible, he cut my hair, he gave me a new name, he dressed me as a boy, and I became one of the boys, or more correctly, one of the men, because I went to work in a glass factory by the name of Hortensia every day, and we worked in the glass factory. And we walked from the ghetto. By that time, the ghetto had gotten much smaller because there were so many people who had been taken out of the ghetto. Only the people who were considered legal could stay.
Have you any idea how old you could have been then?
I believe it may have been around 42 from history books. when the ghetto was liquidated. So I guess I was 5 or 6.
And do you remember being a boy? You know, suddenly
yes.
being made into a boy, and
yes.
how that sort of affected you.
Well, one of the things that happens is in the English language you don't have this, but in the Polish language you have a male and female grammar, so you have to learn how to speak as a boy and to act as a boy, and you know, you have to think of every word that you're saying and dress that way. And I remember one day I remember hearing that I was very bad. What happened was that I was in the barracks with the men, and I had been warned that in case the Gestapo comes in case the soldiers come in, that they would hide me. And I was fast asleep, and apparently this man, I don't know who he was, but I remember he had a big mustache, and he hit me under his blanket with his feet over me, and I was wiggling, and I was moving. I was fast asleep, and I didn't realize what happened. And when the Germans left and they did not see me, all the men started yelling at me of what I had done, that I could have endangered all of them. And I remember feeling, yes, I was very bad, but I didn't mean to be. I just didn't realize that I was fast asleep. And I guess after that I learned maybe you don't sleep so soundly. But you really, you know, I'm just saying that you can't really believe that. But I remember being with the men with no women around at the time. But later on, there were women in different factories, and there were other children in that factory.
Did you begin to identify yourself as a young boy, do you think?
It was more of a man. I had to do the work with the men, and I don't know that there was much of a difference. I mean, we really had to work.
Yes, could you tell me about this factory and where it was?
The name of it was Hortensia, and it's still in existence today. It had been a Polish factory. It had been taken over by the Germans, and I guess after the war it's there. I went back to see it. They wouldn't let us go in, but I spoke to somebody yesterday who was leaving tomorrow. His name is Ben Helfgarten. He's going with Martin Gilbert, and he said that they have a list of the people who worked in that factory. Now, I'm hoping to get a copy of that list, because even if my name would not be on it, maybe my father's name would be on it. And maybe my name as the last name would also be on it. So in a few weeks, maybe I'll be a little smarter to know more about it. But there, what I remember is that we were lined up for counting. We were brought into the factory. There was lots of sand on tracks. I guess they used the sand for the glass. It was very, very hot. And as boys, we had to carry water back and forth. And then we used, like, spatulas to take some jars and vases out, whatever they were, to carry back and forth. But more than anything, what I remember is that the Germans had big dogs, huge dogs on leashes, like German shepherd dogs maybe. And very often they would just let those dogs go, and those dogs would pounce on somebody. And I have 2 marks on my knees where I fell running from those dogs. And whenever I see a dog, and I keep on saying, I'm not going to be afraid, I'm not going to be afraid. It's a little nothing dog, but that scene of those dogs always comes back.
Well, were there many children, many boys working of your sort of very young age? You know, if this would have been 1942, did you say 3?
It may have been 41. Mm. I don't know how long I was there. I just know when the ghetto was liquidated. See, I have no way of knowing where I was in any place. Like, I'm hoping, being in the Imperial War Museum, that I will find when I came to Birkenfelsen. I know exactly when I left, because by that time, things got back to normal, and the liberators made lists, and the people in Sweden had lists of when I entered Sweden. So it was a day between the time I left Birkenfelsen and when I arrived in Sweden. But where I came from and when I came from, I have no idea.
But you obviously were a very young child,
yes.
weren't you?
And I'm not so tall now, and I certainly don't look very masculine. And how I was able to get away with this, I don't know.
And would there have been other boys of your size?
Yes. Rabbi Lau, who was the chief rabbi of Israel now, was one of the boys working there. And I met somebody in England now, who also was working there. So I may have been one of the youngest. I probably was one of the youngest survivors altogether, 3 and a half when the war started. But there were other boys.
And what were you actually doing in this class?
Excuse me. I think that you, in order to work there, you had to be either 10 or 12 years old. So I must have said that I was that age. How I got away with it, I don't know.
And presumably you were keeping up with the work, fact that they kept you there.
Yes.
So what were you actually doing? Can you?
I was moving water, bringing water for the glass, and moving glass jars.
And how long a day? Have you any idea? You know,
all day. it must have been like a 14-hour day. It just seemed to be all day. We'd get up when it was still dark, and I guess in Poland it doesn't get light till. And you know, the things that I remember was it always was cold. Always was cold, except in the factory where the fires were running all the time, where that was hot. But the camps and the transports and the walks and being on the cattle cars, I always remember it being cold. Cold and snow. But I'm sure that in the 6 years we had summers and springs and must have been hot. I don't remember being hot. I do remember being cold.
Do you remember your sort of food situation at that time when you were working in this factory?
I don't remember the food there very much, except that there was bread. The food that I remember more, and I remember that very vividly, is in Bergen-Belsen.
Yes, I'll ask you about that later on.
I don't remember this very much.
And clothing, what you wore?
Well, I was a boy, so I wore boys' pants and jackets. They were not stripes, they were not uniforms that I remember.
Did the other workers, your co-workers, did they know that you weren't really a boy?
I can't remember from that time, but I met somebody in Israel, and when I had talked about him, he says, I remember a girl who was pretending to be a boy. Whether I was the only one or not, I don't know. I haven't met any other girls who did this, but possibly. But I managed to get away with it.
Were you sort of very close to your father at this time? You know, the fact that the pair of you were together?
Yes, I was close to him, but these other people whom I called uncle, I don't know whether that was a name that anybody close to you was given, or they really were my uncles. I would love to find that out. I don't know.
And the people in charge at the factory, what were they like to you? You know, you've explained these horrible dogs. Dishes, but
they were sadists, I guess. These people they seemed to have enjoyed their work. I mean, they were there always to just push you on to do everything and get the work out. And the work was gotten out. I don't think I worked as hard probably as the men did. There was a lot of movements and goings on, and those the tracks and I guess the raw material had to be brought in, the sand and the other things had to be shipped and out. I just remember my being busy with that, the movement and the fires there. And the lineups. The lineups were always there to make sure when you went back to the ghettos and came back. And I don't know how far away that was, but we did have to get from place to place.
Yes. This ghetto that you went back to, would that have been a different one?
No.
From the one you were rounded up from?
No. It was the same one, but there was a large ghetto, and then when that was sort of closed, there was only a small ghetto.
And so they would have been all men in this at this time, would they?
That's what I remember. The first time that I remember women after that was when they no longer needed us in the ghetto. We were rounded up again, and this time put on those infamous cattle cars. Cattle cars where there are no steps to go up, and there are no windows there, and we were shoved into these cars that were meant for animals, for horses, for cows, for pigs, or for lumber, or for coal, and we had to get in there, and really packed in full. And there was no food on the cars, and there was no water. And some people talk about pails. I don't remember a pail. I remember as a child feeling that there were some people that are luckier than others, because apparently somebody in the cattle car sort of said, listen, we can't use the bathroom every place we're standing or sitting. Let's use one corner of the room. It's a railroad car, so maybe a little bit longer than where we're sitting now. And he says, let's make this right corner into the toilet. And I sort of remember it's not fair for the people sitting there because they're sitting in the smell. But after 3 days of not having water, of not having food, of not having any other toilet, and people dying and people vomiting and people doing everything that people have to do in 3 days, I think the whole place was just one big toilet. And the stench was awful from each one of us smelled, and you couldn't stand being next to anybody. And the only air that was coming in, and it was cold, so air was coming in, were like rectangular openings. There weren't even windows that you see on these cattle cars. But one of the things that I do remember is that there were icicles that were made on those cattle cars, and people who were lucky enough to be near them would take them off and use them to drink them. And after about 3 days, and I don't remember how long it was, but other people that I've spoken to said we were probably there about 3 days, and probably that's how long it took to get everybody over. You had asked me before about women. When we got on those trains, women from other factories, there was a factory called Kara and Bugaib, some of them made leather kinds of things, and they were also herded onto these cars. After the car stopped, and I didn't know what the meaning about it was, but I remember hearing this because there are many things as a teenager when I got to the United States I used to think about and dream about and remember and then say, oh, that's what that meant. I didn't know what it meant at the time. But I remember hearing people say that we went over the border. So I, at that time, as I said, I don't know what a border was. But now, of course, I did. And they said they threw out the dead bodies. And then living people were thrown out after that. And again, we had to jump because there was no platform or steps. And we used the snow as a toilet. And we used the snow as drinking water. And people sort of said, we might as well use the Polish money as toilet paper because where we're going, we won't have any use for it, and why give it to the Germans? Now, I remember hearing that and not understanding it. And now I sort of said, you know, it made a lot of sense because Polish money had no value by that time, I suppose. Anyway, while we were on that platform, there were, again, these soldiers with dogs. They were always there and guns. And there was an announcement that all the women would be separated to go one side of the platform and all the men on the other side, and that we were going to camps. I didn't know what that meant. But my father must have realized camp, and again, thinking back at it, people knew that when you went to a camp, you would have to get undressed. Not for gassing. I don't know that people knew about it that or thought about it, but they knew that when you came into a camp, you would have to go for delousing and disinfection. And I believe now, looking back, that the Germans also wanted to confiscate anything that you may have had. And by your getting undressed, you were left with nothing. So my father sort of said, you can't come with me because if we go into the showers, they're going to find out you're not a boy. And he met a school teacher from our hometown. I don't remember her name. I tried so hard to remember her. But he asked her to take me on and to look after me. And he gave me some valuables and some pictures, and he said we would meet in Pietrzykow. Mm-hmm. Well, he never kept that promise. I never saw him again. And with all the research that I've done since 1981, because I wrote to Arlson to try to trace my own life and my parents and my brothers, apparently they found that my mother and brothers had been killed. But even after the war, there are records that I was looking for my father. And the fact that there are no records that I was looking for for my mother and brothers, I guess that it was an accepted fact. But I never found out if he died on the trains, if he was taken to Buchenwald, they claimed that whole group was. I never found anything there. He may have died on a death march. It's as if he never existed. Except when I went back to my hometown, I found their marriage license and found out what he had done and so on and so forth. But as far as the war goes, I was taken with this woman to Bergen-Belsen, and I'm not quite sure of the order, but whether it happened before, well, Before that, on my DP card, it said that I was in a camp called Częstochowa. And that was a camp where there were men. So I may have been with my father at that time, but I really don't remember it as a separate entity. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I'm hoping to do is to see if I can find lists of people who were in Częstochowa.
That is the place where they have the Black Madonna,
that's
isn't
right,
it?
That's
yes,
right,
Częstochowa. Yes,
right.
There was a camp there.
Right.
Yes. Before you go on to your experiences in Bergen-Belsen, which I hope you're going to, it's very interesting, I think, the fact that, you know, you played the boy for so long. And I'm wondering, you know, how as a very young child you kept this up. It must have been very difficult with sort of sanitary arrangements, wasn't it? If there were guards or factory people about, you know. Did you find that, you know, as a young child you became a boy almost, that the pretense was so real that you were able to keep it up so consistently? Or were there problems?
I don't remember. I sort of have a feeling that you couldn't allow yourself to have problems. You just had to do what you had to do. I don't remember. I mean, I must have gone to the bathroom, and I was different. But I also don't really remember bathrooms. I remember using the fields. So if you use the fields, it doesn't matter. You don't have to go to a ladies' room or a men's room. And the men around me may have known that I was a girl. But I think people were so busy with themselves. Whatever it was, I managed.
And, you know, presumably this would have been pre-puberty, wouldn't it?
Yes,
so you
yes,
wouldn't
yes.
have been developed
no.
In any way.
No, even when I came to the United States, I wasn't.
So here you are going to Bergen-Belsen with this school teacher, and suddenly, overnight, you're a girl again.
Well, as I said, I don't remember whether this happened from Częstochowa or from Bergen-Belsen or where it happened, but I remember that we marched. We had a long, long walk where hundreds or thousands, I mean, to me it looked like many, many, many people would walk and walk and walk in the snow with really not having good shoes and people wrapping things around their feet. And I remember, it's one of these other things that I remember as a teenager, thinking how strange it was, because we were up on the mountain, and down in the ravine there were two men lying in the snow with their pants down. They were dressed, but their pants were down, and they were lying in the snow. And as we passed along marching, and as these soldiers, and there were soldiers walking with us, and there were also soldiers, I don't know what they're called, but they're motorcycles, and on the side of the motorcycle there was a seat for another soldier to sit. And as we looked down in this, on the bottom of this mountain, these two men were lying there. Nobody said it, but that incident stayed in my mind, it still does, for years and years. And then later I found out, this was way after the war, that if a Jewish woman ran away, she could possibly hide as a Christian. But if a Jewish man ran away, they would tell him to pull his pants down. If he was circumcised, that would be a dead giveaway. So maybe that's why they were lying there. I don't know if they had just been killed or they were lying there as a reminder to everybody else of what could happen. But it's the kind of scene that you see in front of you very, very vividly.
How were you affected by, you know, death, dead bodies as a young child?
Not at all. I don't remember. I mean, I remember in the ghetto, if somebody died, they were put out, and the bodies would be taken away. But in Bergen-Belsen, there were bodies there all the time, and I don't even think that it bothered me. It was just a natural, normal kind of a thing. I think many things that we accept now as being abnormal, I didn't know that this was not normal. And it had been there for most of my life. The first time that I came to a death where I cried was later on in the United States, which I'll tell you about later. But in Bergen-Belsen, it was just like you pass a garbage heap or you pass a pile of clothes. So you pass, and in Bergen-Belsen, there were piles and piles and piles of bodies for miles all over. And you smelled them all the time. But that was it. That was normal life.
But this very arduous march that you've been describing, when you saw the two men, you know, lying with their trousers down, this was before you got to Belsen.
I believe so, because I don't think that once I got to Belsen, I left until liberation. But exactly what time period it was, I don't know. It must have been before Belsen.
Do you remember saying goodbye to your father?
Yes. I remember him saying that he'll meet me in the house in Pietrakov. And he gave me these pictures. And when I got to Bergen-Belsen, and we did have to strip, and we had to leave everything on piles, those were taken away from me. They were just taken to a soldier. To him, they were garbage. To me, it would have been the difference between knowing what my mother and father looked like and not. And I don't know what they look like. Sometimes I think my grandchildren may have some sort of resemblance, but I really don't know. But everything was taken away. After the war, I have no pictures of what I looked like either. Not until I got to Sweden. And Sweden life started again.
So going into Bergen-Belsen, can you remember your first impressions? Mm-hmm. Because after all, this would have been, you hadn't been in a camp, apart from the Chesterhoa. This would have been your first experience, would it, of remembering a concentration camp?
I remember we came in. I don't remember what the camp looked like, except that there were posts with guards and barbed wire